Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career, what they do, how they got there, and what advice they give to other veterans about that career path. Today's episode number 143 with Trevor Miller.
And he said, well, you know, you could probably make the jump right away. And so then I started to look more into what management consulting was, and I just found myself remembering the difference in my personal development from my 2 years in graduate school versus my first 2 years as an active officer in the Marine Corps. And I felt like if I can make this jump, then I'm going to do so.
Well, happy new year. I hope that 2018 is off to a great start for all of you. I'm excited for my interview with Trevor today. Trevor is actually one of the three panelists for the January 17th Veterans and Consulting Panel, and he shares his story today of going directly from active duty to the Bain & Company Consulting Company in their Boston office. A lot of the things he talks about I liked. He talks about really emphasizing starting early while you're on active duty, preparing for the transition, and he's got great advice around that. He's also got a great phrase around being okay, not being good, and just being willing to take that step back in your career, being willing to try something new, not be an expert, going from being senior in the military to junior somewhere else, and just being okay and taking the long view on that. And of course, this is a great episode if you're considering consulting. For those of you wanting to take a deep dive, just a quick reminder, January 17th, we'll be doing the Veterans and Consulting Panel. You can sign up and register now online under the events section at the Beyond the Uniform website. One last plug, special thanks to Rob50124 and GoFalcon13, both of whom recently left a review on iTunes. I very much appreciate that. If you have a moment to leave a positive review on iTunes, I'd greatly appreciate it. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with Trevor Miller. Joining me today in Boston, Massachusetts is Trevor Miller. Trevor, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hi, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Special thanks to Kristen Colley for introducing me to Trevor. He's actually one of the members of our Veterans and Consulting panel that we have coming up. And I wanted to give a quick background on Trevor. He is a consultant at Bain & Company in their Boston office. He started out at the Naval Academy, after which he earned his Master of Public Administration at Harvard University's John F. Kennedy School of Government. He served in the Marine Corps as a Force Reconnaissance Officer for 6 years and then transitioned directly into Bain. And as those of you who have listened to other episodes realize, I've been diving into some data around veterans and consulting. Fewer than, I believe, 5% of veterans are able to transition directly from active duty into consulting. And from what I remember, Bain is by far the trickiest for veterans to get into. So really excited to have Trevor on the show because he's done what is very statistically very difficult to do, and excited to hear about his story to get there. So Trevor, maybe to kick things off, how would you explain to someone on active duty what you do right now for a living?
That's actually a great question that I thought I knew the answer to by the end of my research, and then now that I've worked on the job for about 6 months, it's evolving. But in the most basic terms, as management consultant, you are an advisor. And the role that you take as an advisor can vary significantly, both in terms of function of what you're advising on, as well as what industry you're advising. But generally speaking, firms such as Bain focus on strategic level questions. And, you know, I think that if you're making the military analogy here, we're talking about truly strategy in a military sense, where these are plans that will perhaps be implemented over a few years, but then have even longer time horizons. They're generally thorny issues, and so that's part of the reason that consultants are brought in. You know, one of my first questions was, well, why don't they just hire people to think about these issues themselves if this is such a big deal. But there are many cases where it helps to get a third party's point of view. And so that's really what we do. We come in, we take a very data-driven, analytical look at their problem in a fairly short amount of time. So about 3 months is average. Develop an answer, you know, with the client, and then provide that to them in a final summary, and in some cases help them action it, but in many cases, you know, just make sure that they are set up to actually be able to do that themselves.
And what is that? I know a lot of times when people ask about consulting, they have two things that they're curious about. The first is kind of like what that looks like on a day-to-day basis, kind of like what would be an example of a day, but also mm-hmm. kind of the week-to-week part of kind of work-life balance and kind of how, you know, how much time you're spending on the road or kind of what time you have off and how this translates to kind of your week-to-week and month-to-month life.
Yeah. You know, as many, I'm sure you get this answer all the time, but it there's a high degree of variance, right? I would generally put days in terms of consulting life into two categories. And this is, you know, when you're local and you're at the office or when you're on a travel case, just in terms of, I guess, mostly logistics, but a little bit of how those, you know, your day runs. So I've done very limited travel. So, you know, in my experience, the days tend to be a little bit earlier. You go to the client site, you have an internal meeting to kind of get everyone on the same page. You might be working on some type of analysis or, you know, doing phone calls from the client site, or you might be meeting with clients there. You might be touring some type of facility. In the afternoon, you generally check in with your team. Go over what everyone's working on, the progress they're making, line of sight to solution, whether it's that day or later on. Local cases, which is what I've spent the majority of my time on, I think, you know, I guess it's similar in reality in terms of what you do, but there's a lot less client interaction. And even with your team, I was surprised to find out how much you're working, you know, at your desk or in your area, and you only really meet with your team at particular times. And it's, I guess, as a military officer, that'd be something that I would flag to the listeners to think about, is that, you know, you truly are an individual contributor in a lot of ways. And yeah, you are on a team and you get to share your thoughts and receive their input, but there's a lot less day-to-day interaction and leadership. Mm.
That makes sense. I mean, it's, I can imagine, you know, you probably envision this as being kind of around the team all the time working with them, but then it's kind of like huddling up, figuring out who's doing what, and then going off and doing that. And I could see how that could be very appealing to some people. And for maybe the extreme extroverts, they might want to be working with someone, you know, all the time, and might not be as appealing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one, you know, it's funny. I have two children. So kind of most people that talk to me think that I naturally gravitate towards local work just because the hours tend to be a little bit better and at least more reliable in terms of getting home. But in many ways, I like travel cases more because, you know, you're there with your team. Even if you're not working on the exact same thing, you're around them, and it's a bit of like a war room mentality. And I just get energy out of that type of work and, you know, physically being with people and discussing problems with them.
That's great. I mean, it makes me think of my time on submarines. One of the things I liked was my experience was, you know, when I was out at sea, it was always on, working a lot. And then when I was back, it was a lot lighter. And it sounds like that could be true of this, is where, you know, if you're traveling, you're kind of immersed, you're kind of focused on that. And then when you get back, you're able to check out a little bit more. Is that fair? Have you been able to kind of check out on the weekends and kind of when you're back, really be back mentally?
Yeah, in my case, it's absolutely been fair. I mean, I've been here since July, and I have never once worked on the weekend.
That's awesome.
Now, I would say that, excuse me, in some people's cases that hasn't been the case. I personally make that a point where one of the things that we do here is when a team starts, you lay out what they call your virtual pets. And everyone has different things. But for me, I just try to draw a hard line on, I'm not even going to look at my email over the weekend. And that was actually difficult for me to do, especially coming from the military where it really was 24/7. And I used to think about that type of mentality as being undedicated and, you know, lazy basically. But it's something that I've endeavored to do here, and it's really strengthened my relationship with my wife and my children and improved my home life. And I think it actually even improved the quality of work when, you know, during those 5 days, because I know, hey, you know, during these 5 days, this is the expectation. But truly, on the weekend, I'm checked out. I'm not thinking about work. And so far, that's worked out fine, and I haven't had to change from that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think that's a great lesson, even if someone doesn't go into consulting. I remember in my internship at McKinsey, we started off the two projects that I did while I was there. They started off with, I like that the phrasing you had of virtual pets, but the sense I got was kind of like, what's sacred to everyone and what's your mm-hmm. working style? And so I remember like one guy said, hey, I run every morning, so I'm offline no matter what's going on, 7 to 8 a.m. And, you know, another guy had his other thing. And so it's kind of nice to be able to think about what matters to you, what your values are, what kind of your stakes are in the ground are. And I think it's such a great exercise, too, to explicitly communicate that to your team, because then people can work around that. They know what the boundaries are, and it's pretty easy to accommodate that rather than being the silent martyr who's not getting their needs met. It's not expressing those. So I think that's a great practice that it sounds like you guys do on every project.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's iterative too, right? I mean, I think one of the biggest struggles you have, whether it's management consulting or I would imagine, you know, many jobs, at least as far as I've read about them, as the project goes on, as the hours tick by, people can start to lose sight of the things, both as a team, but then even internally, they lose sight of the fact that they promised themselves that they were going to run from 7 to 8. And so it's one of the things culturally we try to bring up and force the conversation to keep people honest. And it's something that I wish that I had done more of in the military, to be frank, but it seems to be successful here.
That's great. Well, let's back up and I want to delve more into kind of what your life is like and what things are going on, but let's maybe back up to when you were on active duty. I'm curious to mm-hmm. dissect your career a little bit. And I'm wondering, as you look back, what were things that you did on active duty that you think made it possible for you to go directly from the military to Bain?
Great question again. I would say certainly nothing was done to, you know, deliberately to make that possible. The most immediate thing that helped was the fact that I went to graduate school right after the Naval Academy. And so I think for veterans seeking to go into management consulting, that is a pretty, it's almost binary. Either you have a advanced degree or you don't, which is why, I mean, at least part of the reason that I think that so many veterans go to business school if they're interested in management consulting. And I think that it definitely gave me a big leg up. In terms of, but you know, the funny thing is that while I think that was probably the single biggest help that I had in terms of my background in making this transition, in reality, the things that I happened to do both as an infantry officer and then later as a force reconnaissance officer had a lot of skill parallels to what I do on a day-to-day basis as a consultant, particularly in my final years in force reconnaissance. You know, we weren't making those deployments to Afghanistan and Iraq anymore. We were doing a lot of, we call them bilateral training, but we would go to other countries and train with their special operations units and basically do two things. One is exchange techniques. So just say, hey, we're doing things like this, and you know, how do you do them, and learning from that. But then also trying to improve their processes, make them basically more, the idea is that make them more effective allies of the United States, both increases their defense and our defense at the same time. And it's pretty similar to what you do as a management consulting, coming in, listening to what people's problems are, issues are, trying to help them both think through them and come up with an answer, but probably most importantly is being able to communicate that answer and present it in such a way that it's both palatable, i.e. they want to do it, and be actually actionable, right? So in force recon, that often looked like, hey, you know, this would be great if you could revamp your sniper curriculum and buy these particular weapons because they're much more reliable than the long guns you currently use. But sometimes that wasn't practical. But what they could do is come up with standards for marksmanship that were actually like scientifically consistent versus what they had been doing, which had been, you know, anecdotal and very personal driven.
That's awesome. And what was it like going from, so how did you decide to go into consulting? And then what was that process like of applying and interviewing and actually, you know, getting your foot in the door?
Yeah. So for the decision part, for me is kind of linear, where really the first question was, am I going to stay in the military or not? Mm. And for me, you know, I wouldn't necessarily recommend my path to anyone, but just the way that I had gone about my military career, I'd always been looking to make the biggest impact that I could make wherever that was. And I am not sure that I was right in how I went about it, but I always thought, well, I want to be as close to the action, as close to like the tip of the spear as I could be. So yeah, that's why I went Marines out of the Naval Academy, and then I went infantry, and then I went force reconnaissance, because I felt like I was always getting like closer and closer to the fight, if you will. But just the way that my career laid out against how geopolitics were happening, I felt like I was always just kind of showing up, you know, like a year late. And I never felt the fulfillment that I was looking for. And so 6 years in, I thought to myself, to me, the natural next step would to go a little bit deeper into even like other government agencies that work that I had worked with on my deployments in the security realm. And, you know, I looked into that, and that seemed really exciting. And, you know, talk about being able to make real impact as an individual. But it also came with these like huge time commitments, right? You know, you're gone at least 50% of the year. And the requisite strain on your family. And I just said to myself, you know, I'm proud of what I've done to serve my country. I got it, you know, am I just chasing the tiger, if you will, trying to find the next thing and, you know, through the next door? And is that going to be what I'm looking for? And I eventually decided, well, you know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but there's just this whole other aspect of life that I haven't even touched on, but I am equally interested in, outside the military. So I made that decision. And from there, the question became, well, you know, what exactly are you, and that might seem a little backwards to not even know what I was going to do outside the military, but that's just how I went about it. And I actually thought I was going to go to business school. That seemed like the smart move. It seemed like the path that people took. And in particular, I had been reading a lot about Stanford and GSB, and I thought, you know, this is the place for me. Like, I'm, you know, I have interests in tech and like actually starting my own business, which, you know, you might be laughing about the fact that I'm now a management consultant, which is not exactly the most entrepreneurial step. But I called up a friend of mine by the name of Reed Wildman, who went to the Kennedy School with me, as well as later on going to Stanford's Graduate School of Business. And he basically said, well, what do you want to do, you know, after business school, you know, what are some options you're thinking of? And I thought, well, you know, the first thing I'll probably do is go management consulting, because, you know, you can learn, you know, firsthand experientially all the things that you might study in business school. And I think that would be a nice, like, capstone to that education. And he said, well, you know, you could probably make the jump right away. And so then I started to look more into what management consulting was, and I just found myself remembering the difference in my personal development from my 2 years in graduate school versus my first 2 years as an active officer in the Marine Corps. And I felt like if I can make this jump, then I'm going to do so. And, you know, I'm lucky to have friends like Kristen Colley, who were resources for me to talk to about, hey, you know, what is the process like, you know, help me run interviews, and even just down to the little nitty gritty of knowing, like, when do you put your application in? When are they going to have interviews?
How did you, I mean, I'm wondering, did you choose between, I mean, like, how did you decide on Bain then? So I love the way you've explained this, and it makes sense of kind of going directly and not spending that time at grad school and realizing that you could go into consulting. How then did you then decide, you know, where you were going to apply?
Yeah, so I didn't know enough about consulting in general when I started to really base that on any information other than I did some research and I heard that McKinsey, Bain, and Boston Consulting Group were the top consulting firms. And so I said I'd apply to those, which actually was a little bit easier to get in the process with them than some, you know, I also looked into Deloitte and Oliver Wyman and some other, you know, highly respected firms, and, you know, they're just a little bit larger, and I had a lot more difficulty even getting an interview with those firms. And then in terms of choosing the firm, it was highly driven by the people that I met along the way. You know, Bain in particular struck me as, it's so hard to, you know, you're making these judgments off very minimal information, granted, so there's probably a high degree of error in all my judgments, but it seemed highly analogous to the Marine Corps. You know, it was of the top three consulting firms, it's the smallest, but seemed to me the most closely knit. The people, especially the veterans that I met and spoke with, seemed to generally be, you know, interested in me as a person, not necessarily just like, you know, another consultant coming in to feed the machine, if you will. And then I also really liked their home staffing model, where, you know, the way that Bain staffs their projects, you could be staffed on a project from Boston in, say, Los Angeles, but the team that you're going to be on is from that local office pool, from the home office pool. So, you know, you can work on that project, and then you work on another project, maybe it's in Boston or maybe it's another travel case. But you really start to develop these deep relationships because the teams that you're being put on are from this smaller group of people. It's not the entire company worldwide. And that, you know, really appealed to me because I'm a very relationship-driven person, and I'm always, you know, valuing kind of depth of connection over quantity.
Mm. Yeah, that is like a nice it's a nice contrast, it seems like. You've got the small unit that you're working with closely and, you know, developing tight relationships with and figuring out very, very complex issues. And then you've got the larger organization and the benefits that that brings. But it does seem like of a lot of career paths, it does seem like it does maintain that very tight unit cohesion that a lot of veterans enjoy. And so I can imagine that being very fulfilling, having kind of both the big and the small aspect of that. Do you have any thoughts on how someone might prepare for an interview and how they might stand out in the application process?
So we'll tackle the application process first, because, you know, you have to get the interview before you can succeed on the interview. I think for veterans, the single biggest hurdle is figuring out how to translate your accomplishments to what, whether it's consulting or anyone are looking for it. And that's definitely not something groundbreaking to share, but it was personally shocking to me, like, actually, so you take so much for granted about the things that you've done and how much understanding everyone else will have for that. You know, being in the military for any amount of time, you start to feel like, oh, well, it's just natural that people know, like, even what a deployment is like. But people don't, you know, that's not, I mean, people understand that if you're in the military, that you go to different countries and you stay there for periods of time. But whether that's like normally 6 months or 2 years, that's not actually general knowledge. And so I think being able to take those, that's just indicative of how careful you have to be in terms of translating what you have done. And then the other piece is understanding that, you know, your resume has to be tailored to both the role and the company that you're going to, right? So you have to realize that not only are you describing what you did in ways that make sense to them, but you're saying the things that, or at least highlighting the things that are important to them as a company, which was again shocking and kind of like humbling for me. I spent all this time, you know, trying to become, you know, the best special operator I could, and very proud of having gone to Marine Combatant Dive School and free fall and all these things. And like the reality is that no one cares about that in management consulting, you know. So, you know, it ended up not even making the cut on the resume. And I would imagine that no matter what you did in the military, there are similar things where, you know, there's these individual accomplishments you have that you think of as these big accomplishments, but they're not applicable to what you're trying to do later on in life. And so you end up having to highlight things that maybe you didn't think were that big of a deal, but are huge. You know, I think a great example of that is really highlighting your leadership impacts as an officer, especially where, you know, at a very young age, you get opportunities to be in front of and speak and influence, you know, what are effectively huge numbers of people in the corporate world, right? So, you know, you might take that for granted, but I encourage people to focus on those types of things. In terms of succeeding on the interview, I would say the biggest thing is repetitions. I'm a heavy research early guy, and, you know, I index hard on the preparation, which some people might argue with me about how important that is, but, you know, I read, I think, 4 different books ranging from, you know, your Tried and True Case in Point by Mark Constantino to Victor Chang's book, Cracking the Case. I'm blanking on what the other ones were. But then I probably ran, 60 different practice cases before I even did my first actual interview, if you will. And I'm not, you know, I don't know because I didn't do it any other way, but I think I would have definitely failed if I hadn't put that much time in, because I can tell you with my first case interviews, I just was all over the place and seemed like I felt like an idiot at least. And then you get progressively better all the way to the point where you actually are having fun when you're doing these interviews. And I think that's absolutely necessary, both to sustain the preparation, but then succeed in the actual moment, because no one wants to work with someone who's like clearly just doing it because they quote unquote have to.
What about, you know, not to put you on the spot on this, but I'm wondering if anything comes to mind where a lot of times veterans ask about, like, how do I translate my military experience into, you know, the civilian context? And I'm wondering if you have like a soundbite or an example you can think of how you kind of explained to the civilian interviewer how, you know, what, you know, one of the things that you did in the military and how that was relevant to consulting.
Yeah. All right. So take my last job. I was a force reconnaissance platoon commander. And so, you know, in terms of the military world, you know, we had all sorts of official duties and obligations, one of which was to be the crisis response force for the Marine Corps in the Western Hemisphere, right? But while I was very proud to serve in that role, like if you just say that to an, you know, you list that as a bullet, you know, led the Marine Corps' crisis response force, that doesn't, you know, hit as much. What I ended up parsing it down to was, you know, some of the more basic aspects of what it meant to do that job. So on the one hand, I had to meet with or effectively senior executives, right, being 06s or generals, and describe, you know, both what our status was as a unit as well as, you know, if we're going on a particular mission or trip, you know, what our overall plan was going to be. At the same time, I had to explain, you know, both prepare my Marines and explain to them, you know, the context of our mission and what we were going to be doing and, you know, my intent for them and what success looked like. And, you know, when I focused in on the, hey, I'm comfortable communicating with senior leaders in a formal environment as well as communicating with workers at the operational level, I think that resonated quite a bit with people that I interviewed with or reviewed my resume.
That's great. That's great. Anything else before we move on? Anything else about kind of the interview process or any other thoughts on that? And I'll put for listeners, I'll put in the show notes links to Case in Point and Cracking the Case. And I love that thought of the iterations and the repetitions and how, you know, 60 different practice cases is a tremendous amount of work. But I can imagine how that got you very comfortable so that when you were in the actual interview, you felt confident and comfortable and you were able to just really focus on the finer points rather than thinking about the frameworks that you know, in a way that you probably did when you first started.
Yeah, I guess I would say just two more things. One is, you know, if you're going down this road and you're beginning this preparation, don't be discouraged by not feeling like you're good at it, right? So I know I experienced this personally, and then over the past 6 months, I've helped a lot of other people, you know, get up this case interviewing curve. And as far as I can tell, there's no one that's necessarily natural at it. And so, you know, that took me a little, you know, I really went through some tough times where I was like, this might just be a waste of time because I just might not be smart enough. And, you know, it was pretty depressing, but I found like that's completely natural. And there's no one who just starts doing those cases and just blows them out of the water from day one and is like, oh yeah, like this is fine. I'll just, you know, I'll do one more of these and then we're good. So don't get discouraged. And then the other piece is while there's all of, you're going to do all this preparation, you know, you read these books and they'll talk about frameworks and, you know, I don't want to get too much into the minutia of what the case interview is like, but it starts to be, formulaic, right? And you start to feel like, well, this is the quote unquote answer, and it has to fit in like this framework, you know, because when you listen to Victor's podcast, you know, when he goes through his answer afterwards, that's what it looks like. But in reality, all the case interview is doing is simulating solving a problem collaboratively and thinking about things in a structured way, right? Which is particularly important in a time-constrained environment. And it was not until I reached that level of comfort where I thought, okay, fine, like, you know, you probably halfway through, I would do a case, you know, you hear the problem and you think, okay, well, what's this framework have to look like? And you're thinking in terms of frameworks that you've seen before. And where I made my breakthrough was realizing that just think about it like a regular problem. Think about it in a structured way, but come up with your own framework. Don't worry about if it fits exactly within what, you know, the experts say should be the answer for this. And then approach it like that, and everything else flows so much better. You know, you feel like you're having a real conversation with the person. it feels just much more tangible. And I don't know if that resonates, with anyone else going through that process. But for me, realizing those two things were just huge factors in being able to both keep at it and then later on succeed.
Yeah, and I think that applies to so many things. I love that point, too. It's like, usually people are not good at things when they're first starting and take some of the pressure off. And I think that a lot of the veterans I know and interact with, they are pretty harsh on themselves. They're pretty critical, and they have exceptionally high standards. And I think that there's obviously the upside of that where it drives them and causes them to excel. But the downside is they may be hesitant to try new things. They may be hesitant to experiment, and they may be hesitant to take the failures and kind of bruises that it'll take to learn a very new skill set and ultimately be very confident and competent in it. And so I like the way that you laid that out, because it's just saying that, like, look, everyone sucks at this from a start, civilian and veteran alike, and just dive in and get some practice and you're going to get better at it, which I know it sounds easy, but sometimes it's more difficult to actually do that because it sucks being, not good at something, and it sucks not knowing what you're doing and feeling that awkward and that discomfort.
Right. And there's like a little nugget in there where, veterans are by definition older when they go through this, right, than someone who goes straight out of undergrad into consulting. And so I feel like you also have this, call it pride, ego, but you don't want to suck at things. You're 5 years later or 6 years later in life, and you want to be better. And so it's humbling.
Yeah, I think that's great. I hadn't actually thought of it from that angle either, where that adds another layer to this, and that in many of these cases, you will be older than your peer set, at least initially, and that can be another ego dinging experience. One other thing I was wondering about is, for someone, maybe taking another step back, for someone listening to this, you've talked about what it's like to be a consultant, but any thoughts on why a career in consulting may appeal to a veteran, and then, conversely, indications that they really might not like it?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot of appeal, especially at like a, I was going to say theoretical level, but if you put aside like what kind of person you are individually and just think of it on a, what's the most exciting and beneficial thing you can do. I don't know. I'm not conveying that well, but what I'm trying to say is, a lot of the appeal of consulting is that you get to work on very interesting, challenging problems. And then, I think particularly to veterans, you by definition have made the decision to leave the military and go do something, but most people don't know what that is, right? And so management consulting offers the opportunity to gain exposure to all sorts of different industries, functions, and not just like learn about them in a general sense, but work at like the cutting edge of whatever they're working on. And so I think there's a lot to be desired there. For me, that was a huge motivator and reason why I pursued it so much, is because I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I figured this was a way to get a world-class education while getting work experience. Excuse me. And what I would caution people to think about is, if while that all sounds well and great, just make sure that those types of problems and that type of structure actually appeals to you. So I think the biggest part is that you are an advisor versus a doer in this case, which is very different than anything. I'm trying to think of anywhere in the military where you're like just purely an advisor and not an operator, and I'm struggling to think of anything. In most cases, even if you're supporting or doing something that is enabling someone else to do something in the military, you're still doing that thing. It's very different to be a consultant, where you come in, you look at the problem, but you can come up with the best answer in the world. If they don't believe you, if your client doesn't believe you, or the client, for whatever other reasons, decides that they don't want to pursue that, then it just doesn't happen. And you don't get to like change that later on, you know, say, actually, I'm going to stick around and make this happen. You know, sometimes, you know, another difficult thing is when they do say, oh, yes, this is a great strategy, we're going to pursue this. And then, you know, the engagement ends and you don't go to that client site anymore. And, you know, you're not part of it. Right. It was exciting while it lasted, but you're on to the next thing. For me, I find that exciting. I'm very curious and I enjoy the process of learning about a whole new area, a whole new function. And that works well for me. But if you're interested in learning about things in more depth, then it's probably not the best place for you in that case, at least until you get much more senior in your career.
Such a good point. It's like, you know, when you say that, I realize that so much of, no matter what you do in the military, it is very likely it is heavy on operations and execution and doing stuff and getting shit done and that sort of approach. And, you know, when you say that, it makes me think of two things. The first is like how, you know, uncomfortable that may make a veteran then to go into the advising and my more of like strategic aspect and not being the doer, not being the implementer and being just the person who's analyzing and making recommendations. On the flip side of that, it seems like such an incredible skill that's so useful to build out. And I'm thinking especially of, there's a friend of mine from business school who was a Bain consultant before business school and then a Bain consultant after business school. And I always like brainstorming with him on ideas because I always take this approach going from the military then to startups, which is all execution. I am always just like wanting to dive in and do things. And I really appreciate the perspective he brings to the table, which is like, hey, these are the three biggest challenges we're going to face. And high level, this is the opportunity and how big this could become. A completely different mindset and framework that I know he developed through consulting and through continuously dropping into different companies with incredibly complex problems and having to be very efficient about how to tackle that problem rather than just diving in and kind of doing stuff. And so I appreciate your answer on that because I think that there's a lot that may be uncomfortable for veterans in that sort of capacity, and yet that discomfort might lead to a lot of growth that will help them throughout their career.
Yeah, absolutely. That's well put in that. I mean, it's definitely about one thing that you find, I think, early on just doing case interview prep, even before you even get to the job, is it's just a valuable way to look at problems, right? This like structured, you know, take a step back, figure out, yeah, like you said, what is the size of the prize before you even pursue it? But yeah, it's true. It's just, you know, it can be uncomfortable because it's not what you're used to, but there's a certain value in that discomfort that, is important just in and of itself, because if you didn't put yourself in that different position, you wouldn't grow in that way.
One of the things I always like to ask about too, I'm just trying to be conscious of our time here. So one thing I always like to ask is just any resources. And you've already mentioned a couple with Case in Point, Cracking the Case. As you think back on the last 3 or 4 years in, you know, getting ready for the transition and then now that you're in it, are there any books or podcasts or websites or programs that you have helped you in your civilian career that you would recommend to veteran listeners?
You know, we've covered a lot of them. I also, military to business is this, it's what they really do is they offer, you know, basically business school consulting, I guess, you know, advice on how to shape your resume or your, you know, your resume and your essays and all that. But they have this blog where they just have different posts about different things, and they're mostly related to figuring out, you know, when to make the transition to business school and things to think about. But I think a lot of the lessons that I got from that actually applied, even though I didn't go to business school. And I just thought it was just in terms of high quality, free, you know, content out there. I really like that website as well. Yeah, I think that's about it for like online. So we already covered the different books. I'm a big Victor Chang promoter, especially because again, you know, he has a lot of stuff that's free, right? I always index high on that price. And you know, like I said, I like your podcast. I know we're obviously on it, so ostensibly anyone listening to this knows about it, but it's truly a good place to just to learn about. You know, I always think it's very valuable to hear what other people have done, right? There's so much wrapped up in hearing a story that someone else did because they had to go and make all of those same decisions. And, you know, no one has enough brain power to take in all of the data. And so at a certain point, you just have to put a stake in the ground and make a decision. And I think it's valuable to see how other people thought about it and did it and how it turned out for them.
That's great. And I know there's so many topics we weren't able to get to today, but I know we'll cover those in the veteran and consulting panel. You know, some of those topics are things about like other ways that people have gotten into Bain and then kind of where people go from there and kind of career path. And I know that we'll cover that on the panel, but I always like to end with one final question, which is just open-ended. And that's that, you know, we've covered a lot of topics about consulting, about using your time in the military to prepare for your career afterwards and things like that. Is there anything we haven't covered that you want to share with active duty and veteran listeners?
Yes. So, first of all, on a logistical level, just start early, right? I was blown away by how much effort was required to transition. And admittedly, like I went through this whole process where I tried to figure out, am I going to business school or am I going to go into industry and then figure that all out. So, you know, if you already have made those decisions, it could take less time. But don't forget about just how much time that will take, both in terms of making those preparations, but then there's also this other factor of many of these jobs and schools have timelines that are outside of your control. And if you don't think about this early enough, you run the risk of just barely missing a deadline, which then means you have to wait a whole other year. The other thing that I would just highlight is that don't sell yourself short. I guess the thing I'm thinking of here is when I was both writing my resume and then in my early stages of talking to people, you know, networking and interviewing, I guess, I had a tendency to kind of downplay accomplishments just because they're in the military, there's this culture where, you know, your failures are your own and your accomplishments are your men's or your Marines. And it leads to this kind of, at least for me, like I didn't feel like it was appropriate a lot of times to say, hey, you know, we were the best unit at this, or we, you know, we did do that better than anyone else. But in the business world, that comes off, that's not perceived as humility. That's perceived as not have being successful. And in the limited amount of time that people have to listen to your story and evaluate whether or not they want to hire you, they're not going to observe that nuance. And I think it hurts a lot of veterans because I think I'm not alone in that thought and approach. And I think it unfortunately works to their detriment.
Yeah, I appreciate your saying that because it is something that's come up before where veterans are can have difficulty speaking on their behalf and being their own advocate and selling in a way that reflects well on them and the organization they came from. And I echo what you're saying that I think that the veteran community is great in talking about a team's accomplishment and the accomplishments of their subordinates, and they have an extreme aversion to taking any credit or, you know, talking about what they did. And the downside on that is that when you're up against 20 or 50 other civilians who have had 5 years of training in really authentically selling themselves and what they did and talking about, you know, what they did, which is really what their team did, but speaking about, hey, I led this change that did all these great things. A veteran can be penalized for that because they just seem not as accomplished beforehand, even though in actuality they've accomplished the same amount, if not more. And so I like that. I'm just curious, have you found any way to make that easier or more authentic, or do it in a way that still you don't feel like the used car salesman?
I mean, let's face it, this is part of the reason people hate applying for jobs, or at least I do, because no matter what you do, at a certain point you're bragging, right? And it's very uncomfortable and not something I enjoy doing. I think the way that I tackled that problem was I always tried to, and then this also helps with translating, I try to put things with a numerical reference whenever I could, right? Because then it's just kind of, it is what it is, right? Whether that was like the budget that you were in charge of, or your ranking as compared to your peer group, or those kinds of things. And then also just focusing on like what you actually did. So, sometimes I'll read these resumes from veterans where it says, yeah, I was a platoon commander in Afghanistan, and my platoon improved security 50% in the region of Nowzad. And it's like I'm sure they did improve security, but let's just make that more tangible to like what, you as a leader actually did to empower your platoon. And then how did that actually impact what was going on in the region, rather than trying to, keep at this high level, right? Where, in reality, there are so many different things going on that impacted that it doesn't seem right to take credit for it. And I don't think you have to either. Like, you can keep them to things that, again, this is something I struggle with. They might seem mundane to you, but I think they do resonate quite well with employers of all types. You can talk about how many times you sat down and counseled your individual Marines, sailors, airmen, soldiers. Just by virtue of being in charge of so many people, that's going to be a lot more than your typical, even business school grad. Like, in the corporate world, you just don't get the chance to lead that many people. Mm. And so I think that's something that you can differentiate yourself on, as well as something that is very valued, at many of these companies, because they want leaders and they want, there's no substitute for that type of experience.
This is awesome. Well, Trevor, I appreciate your taking the time to speak with me and the Beyond the Uniform listeners. Very, very excited to have you on the Veterans and Consulting panel. And it's very helpful. I think that this field of consulting is such a great fit for so many veterans. And as you've pointed out, it kind of complements their operational experience in a way that could make them a better, long-term performer, but also just giving them a deep dive into different industries and different functional roles. And so thank you so much for taking the time to share with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure.
All right, I hope you enjoyed my interview with Trevor. Quick reminder, he will be on the panel for the Veterans and Consulting event I'm hosting on January 17th. Take a moment to sign up for that today if you're interested. Thanks to all of those of you who have left positive reviews on iTunes as well. If you haven't and have a moment to do so, would greatly appreciate it. Thanks, have a fantastic week, have a fantastic start to the new year, and we'll be back next week with more interviews with veterans about their civilian career.